Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks for joining me again this week. The fact that you are tuning in to Blue Lives Radio means that you care about America's law enforcement officers. I thank you for that. There's a lot to talk about. So before we get to our incredible guest for this week, where we talk about the most important topic in law enforcement as far as I'm concerned, and that is officer survival, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Well, it's happening again. Another persecution and prosecution of an American law enforcement officer for murder. This is another case that makes me sick to my stomach to read. It's coming out of Huntsville, Alabama. Now, Officer William Darby, I was a police officer for 2 or 3 years, he gets dispatched to a suicidal man with a gun call. Everyone who has been in law enforcement knows that suicidal people become homicidal people in a heartbeat, quite literally. And this officer, along with two other officers, responded, found the man, found him armed, ordered him to drop his weapon. He did not. The officer felt threatened by his actions, opened fire, and killed the suspect. Of course, the suspect was adjudged to have mental issues, which is not a surprise because that's who cops deal with. So the officer was investigated by the normal procedural entities that investigate officer-involved shootings. He was absolved of any of anything other than it being justifiable. So he goes back to work, and then out of the blue, the district attorney, some guy named Bob Broussard, went to the press and said he was, quote, gravely concerned, and then presented it to a grand jury and got him indicted for murder. I'm almost speechless at the number of occurrences that we are seeing in this country where political individuals, like people who are voted into office, like this guy, Broussard, takes it upon himself to purposefully go out and indict a cop for murder for an on-duty, justifiable shooting. And let's face it, almost all of the prosecutions that have taken place in this country where a district attorney has come out, and of course they make a big splash. They go out in front of the TV cameras. They go to the media talking about how they're tough on law enforcement and they're going to get justice. Almost every single one of them has resulted in a not guilty verdict. Why? Because they're not guilty. And this is another case where this police officer was exonerated by the shooting teams. And yet the district attorney becomes a combatant in the war on cops. When I talk about the war on cops, it's far more than just the physical attacks. It is the political attacks like this. Now, this officer's life is ruined. I fully believe that he's going to be found not guilty. Now, one thing that I did see in this that has not taken place in a lot of other jurisdictions is that the police chief came out and the mayor came out fully supportive of this law enforcement officer, fully supporting him and saying he didn't murder anyone. And the chief said he followed all the directives. So they're really standing behind him. But you know what? When it comes down to it, he's the guy. Officer Darby is the one sitting on the hot seat, literally facing prison time. And we all know that juries can do some crazy stuff when they're part of the political process. So here this young man did his job, felt threatened, and as a reasonable officer, if a man is holding a gun, refusing to comply, and raises it, he is doing what he needs to do to go home. Now, they're making a big deal about this guy, the suspect's mental illness. Well, that's all fine and good. The cops are not therapists. It's not the time to do therapy. It's the time to save your own life and the lives of your fellow officers and citizens. So, as I said, suicidal people become homicidal people, and they force the police to kill them. Happens all the time. And now this officer is facing trial for murder. This is another part of the war on cops. And why we're talking about the war on cops. I have written and spoken a number of times about the Berkeley Police Department. Well, there was another major occurrence last week in Berkeley versus Antifa. So there was a march by what is considered, some people call it a rightist group politically. I think there were actually two groups that were going to march that are considered right-wing groups. They are, I forgot the names of them, but they were going to be they're going to be demonstrating. Well, Antifa heard about it, and Antifa thugs swooped down on Berkeley again. Now, the last few times that this happened, the Berkeley police were literally kept from doing their jobs by the politicians, the mayor, the city council, and then, of course, the police chief was following his orders. They were told to stand down. It was absolute mayhem. People were beaten. It was a bad situation. Well, there was still some rioting. There was still some burning and looting. But this time, through the sources I have on the that were literally on the line, things were very different for Antifa, because the people in charge of this, it was Berkeley Police, but they let tactical people run the response, which is exactly what it should be. And this time, Berkeley PD was ready for him. They made a number of arrests. They literally attacked the Antifa line, who was masked, who had shields, who had explosive devices. And when the Antifa people charged the police line, the police held firm and they took care of business. They shot them with pepper balls, with rubber bullets, with flashbangs, with defensive devices, and they took care of business. So this is very different than the last time, and I'm happy to see that the Berkeley police were allowed to be the Berkeley police. They kept a bad situation from getting worse. They took a lot of people to jail. And here's one of the little asides that I found out, that they were Antifa is becoming better and better trained. The tactics used by this group is becoming more and more sophisticated. They will mask, and then they will attack, and then they will when they're driven back, they will drift into the crowd and unmask, so the police don't know who is who. That is pretty damn sophisticated. But what's interesting is one of the people, when they unmasked, was the aide of one of the city council people. The fox is in the hen house in Berkeley. But happy to see that the Berkeley police were allowed to be the Berkeley police. That's something that should be celebrated. And it is something that all police departments, when they are confronted with anarchist groups like this, should take their lead. In fact, while we're talking about this, this happened in Portland as well. And the Portland police made minimal arrests, because the mayor in Portland, who also appointed himself the police director, is a nincompoop. He is a liberal moron who couldn't care less about the safety of his cops or his citizens. And they have a police chief. He appoints police chiefs that will go along with his line of thinking. The police did respond with force on several occasions. And so the chief comes out and says, oh, she's investigating the police. They're investigating their use of force to see if it was appropriate. Well, gee, what a nice way to work for people. Then when you're a cop and you're facing a hostile crowd who's throwing bottles and rocks, firebombs, and the chief comes out and says that she's going to investigate you for your response. It's madness in Portland, madness. And we just see this over and over again. Portland Police Department, Portland Police Bureau, I feel a great deal of compassion and empathy for those law enforcement officers who are working the streets there, knowing that they have leadership like this, certainly is a morale killer, and it also affects their lives both emotionally and physically. This is part of what I call the pussification of policing. You can take that as you wish. Talk about police, which of course is what I do on this show. I want to celebrate a police officer, a Hastings-on-Hudson police officer in Yonkers, New York, heroically saved a little boy. She saw him jump from an overpass on her way to work. He wasn't even working. She saw her name is Officer Jesse Ferreria Cavello, and she's with the Hastings-on-Hudson police. She's on her way to work. She sees a preteen boy running along the Sawmill River Parkway and watched in horror as he climbed over the guardrail and jumped from an overpass onto concrete. And according to the officer, she said that everything happened so fast. I think my adrenaline was pumping on high, no doubt in my mind. And she stopped her car, stuffed her pockets with supplies from her first aid kit, and then jumped after the kid. And she managed to get there. She didn't get injured herself, which is a miracle. And she was able to perform CPR on the boy and bring him back. So, I mean to tell you, you know, we don't hear about all the heroic things the cops do every day around this country. But this is one that I really wanted to celebrate, and a big shout out to this officer and the in the police department over there in New York. So, you know, when I tell a story like that, it reminds me of the pride that I felt being a cop, and the pride that most officers who are working and who did work on the job feel about themselves and about the profession. So when I read a headline like this, it makes my blood boil. Elizabeth Warren declares criminal justice is racist front to back. Elizabeth Warren. Jesus. You know, it seems like radical politicians on the left, they love to have the whipping boy be the law enforcement officer. And that's what she is doing. She is trying to get elected, trying to further her political career by sacrificing law enforcement officers' integrity. They're trying to divide the country and the people from its police for political purposes. She's a disgusting creature. I can't stand her. This is just another example of pandering for votes, of trying to create a political base that despises law enforcement. And this has been consistent on her, what she has said publicly about law enforcement. So Elizabeth Warren, I think you're a piece of human garbage, and I hope you don't get elected to dog catcher. Well, that's it for my view from the blue for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and we're going to get down to the guest today, who is going to talk about something that I feel is vitally important, the most important topic in law enforcement, officer survival. One thing I remember so vividly from my days on the street was wearing body armor. Now, I got to tell you, it's not very comfortable. It saves lives, but it is hot. And when you take it off at the end of the day, it's drenched with sweat. Doesn't smell so good, and it's always an issue. So there is a new invention, and it is an odor eliminator, basically called. It's a spray. It's a spray, and it's great for arresting odors. So they actually call it Arrest My Vest. This is some amazing stuff. You don't have to just use it for that. You can use it for tactical gear, for your gear bag, for gym clothes, for all kinds of stuff. But this is, it works. It's not expensive. There's unscented, there's scented. And I would certainly advise you, because this is a great product, to check out. You're going to love the name of this website, stinkyvest.com. So go to stinkyvest.com. It's an amazing product. It is a necessary product, unfortunately, and it's really specifically for law enforcement officers, for their tactical gear and their vest. It's Arrest My Vest Spray. Check it out, stinkyvest.com. To all my active duty law enforcement out there, as well as if you are a business owner, you need security, I want you to listen to this message. This is really important because there is an organization out there. It's a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. And they're out of Arizona, but they have a full nationwide reach for employing off-duty officers for security and traffic assignments. You know, almost every law enforcement officer I know works, they call them extra jobs, in order to make ends meet. Because let's face it, we're not exactly paying our law enforcement officers a whole lot of money. So they have to do extra jobs in order to make ends meet and put food on the table and have a couple vacations. So law enforcement specialists, they have agreements with all kinds of police agencies around the country. You have to just contact them and they will put you to work. So if you are a law enforcement officer, you want to work extra assignments, these jobs that come up, sometimes through your department, but you can get more of them through law enforcement specialists. So check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And if you are in need of security, if you are in need of hiring law enforcement officers for security or traffic assignments, give them a call as well. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Phone number is 855-976-4757. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that these folks know what they're doing and they are dedicated to assisting law enforcement officers. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a man who is a treasure to law enforcement, who has saved the lives of more officers through his teaching and instructing in officer survival, as well as entertained law enforcement officers for decades. His name is Dave Smith. He's also known as J.D. Buck Savage. And he's been an active law enforcement trainer for more years than I'm even going to talk about, because it's a long, long time. Dave, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio again.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you. What a great intro. Thanks a lot, Randy. And I wish it was under more pleasant situations, though. This has been a tough year for us.
And it's, you know, I reached out to you for this particular segment, Dave, because of the absolute carnage and bloodshed on law enforcement, the violence that we faced just recently with the murders of several officers, and I think we had 11 shootings of police officers within a period of about 5 or 6 days, all in different regions of the country. What the hell is going on?
I got to tell you, this has been a very frustrating thing. And, you know, for the last few years, we've seen this descent into an uncivil order. And it really goes back, it hardens back to a philosophy that we've seen, that, you know, we've seen this constant attack intellectually from the media elites, the intellectual elites in this country, these people who are literally intellectual yet idiots, to talk about them in terms of a great essay that everybody should read if they ever get a chance, by Nassim Nicholas Taleb wrote. He's one of my favorite authors about that stuff. But, you know, this is the problem, is they come up with these philosopher king ideas to change our society without any second order thinking. They think, oh, well, I'll just change this and this will happen. Well, at first that may happen, but the next thing you know, you got civil disorder and chaos. You know, we've seen this from the left. Unfortunately, for 8 years, the left was in charge of our government.
Well, what we're seeing now is, you know, you as especially as a trainer in officer survival, you got to be shaking your head when you're seeing some of the body cam footage and dash cam footage that has law enforcement officers so concerned with the optics and clearly being afraid of persecution and prosecution that they are not using the proper amounts of force when they should be using it.
That hesitation factor that's being built into our, this is one of the problems. The paradox of this whole situation is when you make a blanket statement, like I've made the mistake of saying in the past, is, well, this we're starting to train for hesitation. Then I get told, well, this class didn't do that. Well, here's my problem. When you start talking about de-escalation principles, for instance, decades ago, we had verbal judo, which was a form of de-escalation, a verbal manipulation of a situation to de-escalate it without it getting into physical, hopefully getting into a physical force confrontation. But it never did solve every fight, because whether you want to de-escalate a situation or not, it's up to the suspect who decide if, in fact, there is any de-escalation. But what we're seeing now is this constant harping on it, and some of this training is not, as scientifically based. In fact, you know, a lot of this stuff has no empirical evidence. It's just all been intellectually sat around and thought up and then applied to law enforcement. This is like, we're seeing this literally the last 5 years, this assault on our training, assault on, and again, it's them. One would call it intellectually emasculating law enforcement, and that's the whole problem. It started with people starting to say simple things like, well, we're too aggressive in our training. Well, the world's aggressive, gang, and we don't have time to negotiate a control in a chaotic situation. We need to gain control quickly. And these are the kind of things that people, with our body cameras now, people who are not trained, not experienced, and have no context in reality, look at us in a physical confrontation and say, look how aggressive they were. Look, yes, exactly right. I don't have time to piddle around. I don't know the intent of the suspect. And quite honestly, there's no way I can make force look nice. And that's the problem. Taser fails sometimes. Chemical agents fail sometimes. A lot of times, less lethal strikes, like with your baton and stuff, fail. And so we're going to have to go hands-on with people. That looks ugly. And the problem is that we have these commentators, some of these people who are claimed to be retired experts I've never heard of, and I sit there aghast at the things they say on our medias.
You know, I was asked to be on CNN regarding the use of force, and I've never had this happen before or since, but the producer asked me how I was going to answer the question, and after I told her, she said, "You know what? We can't use you because right. They were shopping around for a commentator that would go along with their line of thinking. That was very clear that they were censoring the yep. truth."
I had the same thing happen right after when the riot started happening in Ferguson. I had done a couple interviews on CNN, and they called me and said, "Hey, can you do an interview today? We want you to comment on the militarization of law enforcement." And I go, wait, what are you talking about?" They go, "Well, all these police there in St. Louis area, they have all this military equipment, and we want you to critique it." And I go, "Well, I'm not against us having equipment in riot situations, especially. I'm against the federalization of law enforcement." And I wasn't on, needless to say, that night.
Yeah, that's a shock to me. You know,
yeah.
You said something that I actually recently did an informational video on, and you said it almost exactly like I did. Use of force isn't pretty. Policing nope. is not pretty. And nope. and it's time that we change the narrative to reality. People expect from, I don't know, maybe from media, from movies, that when a police officer puts their hands on somebody, they're going to comply and life is going to be good. But we all know the realities, and there is no use of force that looks pretty. And yet, when we see little snippets of 15 seconds of video that has been edited just at the moment that the officer is doing a couple hand strikes, it is then turned against law enforcement and not based on reality.
Exactly right. You know, and that's the thing, this editing, what it does is it takes it out of context. And the problem is, people need to understand, the quicker that law enforcement officer gains control over that subject, the less liability there is to the public, to the police officer, and the suspect. And that's why we use overwhelming force. I have actually seen some of these quote experts on TV talking about, well, the officer can only use the next higher level force. And that's no. What does that mean? That's nonsensical. This is why I was always against these use of force continuums. They seem nice. The problem is that I don't know, because you're saying, well, the suspect has empty hand techniques, I got to use this. Wait, the suspect's also 6'4", 245, and a mixed martial artist. That's a guy that's going to maybe end up getting shot, because no officer can afford to be disabled or made helpless in a confrontation. Because one of the things the public is never reminded of, and yet every law enforcement officer listening knows, we bring deadly force to a fight. We have to have the entire spectrum of force. Therefore, we bring that force. And like our horrible tragedy the other day showed us, an officer disarmed and murdered by his own firearm. And this is something that happens, not as much as, thank goodness, that manufacturers have produced a lot of great holsters. But not that long ago, about 1 in 7 officers killed were killed with their own handgun. That's not a good statistic. And the public has to be aware of that. We cannot lose the fight. That's why we tend to accelerate our response. Plus, no one tells us what their intent is when they start a fight. Do they intend to kill us or just get away? You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, let's go back to that Weymouth officer that you were referring to. You know, this is such a horrible, tragic situation. The officer made a vehicle stop. The suspect somehow got out, was vandalizing a house or vandalizing a piece of property. Right. And when the officer approached, this guy picked up a big rock and was able to get close enough to the officer to beat him senseless, take his gun and execute him, and kill another woman at the same time. When this hit the news and I posted about it on my Facebook page, I had, I'm going to say, 75 to 100 messages from cops around the country, all thinking the same thing. What do you think that they said to me, Dave?
Well, they probably all said, that's what I'm being trained to do as well. And I'm concerned. I'm hesitating. Yes. I don't want to be on the news. I don't want to be on CNN tonight as the next officer to have the scrutiny of some politically oriented local prosecutor going after, you know, and this
exactly.
is the problem.
Exactly. And so every one of these officers that sent me a message saying, you know, did he hesitate? Was that the reason that he allowed this guy? And
right.
then the chief of police made a statement and he talked about the anti-law enforcement environment, which I thought was kind of telling in a way that is he preparing us for the from the results of the investigation that are going to reveal that he didn't use that the officer didn't use deadly force because of hesitation? That's the question.
Right. That's my fear as well, that we're going to hear the truth. You know, this is, we live in a day and age where we're sheltered from truth. The public is not told reality. And the media, the elites, you know, you said that, you know, we have this assault on cops, this attitude about cops. The American public loves law enforcement more now than all the way back to the 60s. The problem is the elites, the intellectuals, the politicians, the universities, and especially the media have this antagonism, and they're constantly trying to agitate, to divide people by race, to divide people by sex, by economic income, by everything. It's this constant need to aggravate. And unfortunately for my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, we're the pivot point of social order. And that they want to decay that. They're trying to destroy that. You know, you see, you're going to see, I predict, as we get closer to the November elections, a greater and greater aggregate of these, protests, these stage protests. And in those protests, you know, this is because this is a strategy of the left, you're going to get more and more instigators, catalysts, as they would be, or crystals. You know, in chemistry, you use crystals to create a condensation, you know, and that's what they're going to have, is these agitators who are trying to make the crowd be focused and violent. And again, who's going to be the focus of that violence? Man, the brothers and sisters out there trying to keep civil order. And this is, again, we're going to see these strategies across the board, a media that attacks us every time we have to use force. And at the same time, politicians who will use anything to gain power and advantage. And that's the whole problem. And then leadership has got to step up. Thank goodness the Chicago commissioner stepped up the other day as the media was pushing this unarmed black man murdered by police scenario again to the Chicago community. The problem in Chicago is not police officers killing unarmed black men. It's black men killing black men. And again, what the politicians want to talk about, guns, not the social problems. It's getting very frustrating.
And still the media, even after the video was released, the body cam video that was slowed down that actually showed the suspect reaching for his gun,
yep.
The media still referred to him as a victim of police violence. And there were protests. Protest
yep.
in the street.
Yep. Well, the problem is they couch it in such a way. Even this is truly 1984, and the problem is our media is pushing for a big brother in the name of populism, or the name of democracy, or the name. They have all these catchphrases that are absurd, and you're at the same time. It's like, gang, no, you have a great society. You're trying to bring it down. And at the same time, they'll always say, well, we have income disparity. Yeah, we're always going to have income disparity. And once we have a strong Soviet-style socialist government, you'll have the technocrats and the politicians driving their big cars. And then the rest of us, those of us that don't get sent to gulags, And, you know, this is amazing. I know I sound paranoid, but my God, what's the teleological end? What is the result throughout history when you go the direction that so many of these politicians and so many of our media elite and especially our university intellectual class are pushing for? Well, they're going to do it right this time. Now, socialism has no right. And the problem is I see these pushes all the time. You know, we you swear to defend the Constitution, not a politician. And the problem is that now cops are being taught procedural justice. Well, one of the root principles of procedural justice, as John Rawls talked about in his book, A Theory of Justice, is there is no God, there's no Constitution, there's no true right or wrong, there's only fairness. Fairness is the God of procedural justice. Therefore, the first thing we'll have to look at when you commit a crime is what's your race, what's your sex, what's your orientation. All these things are critically important. And people just blindly go, yeah, well, I teach procedural. No, you teach, but you have no idea what you're actually teaching. What's the root of this? And America's full of this malarkey. We still have a Justice Department that is still hunting cops. And this is one of the things you want to stop cops hesitating. Let them know that, look, we train you properly. You know, the old saying, by God, if you're in fear of your life and you have to shoot somebody, if you honestly think, oh, my God, I'm about to be killed and you have to shoot somebody, that's probably constitutionally valid. That's exactly what we have in our law enforcement training, you know, to teach you when you're at that level of fear.
Look what's happening in California, where California legislator is trying to codify the exact opposite of the reasonable officer Supreme Court decision.
Exactly. You just took that next sentence out of my mouth. Exactly right.
Great minds.
Now we have politicians. I know, right? And that's the thing. This is the insanity that we see, and it's always couched in some better purpose, some great Plato's Republic dream. Which, by the way, is always the godfather of all totalitarian system, is Plato's thinking, that philosopher kings should rule us, the wise among us. You know, I'm with Aristotle, man. Give me the first 300 people in the phone book, although nobody knows what I'm talking about. But do the first, 300 people, you know, and they're probably going to come up with a more collective wisdom than the intellectual elite. And that's the whole problem that I see is that the California has become run by these philosopher kings, and it's running it into the ground. Their filth, the chaos in San Francisco and LA, and what do? Their solution is just, well, let's take money. Let's take other people's money and throw it at the problem without a basic understanding of the nature of human beings. Cops, you give me 50 cops could run California better collectively than their whole legislature, and especially Moonbeam, the governor, because you cops out there, you have a realistic understanding of human nature. And like Aristotle said, let's find a system that matches the human being and find happiness, not make human beings match the system, because nobody's going to actually change. And that's been always the failure of these socialist dreams, these imperial dreams, these philosopher kings believe in. And the problem is law enforcement bears the burden of trying to fulfill these dreams that go nowhere.
Well, and we've seen the liberal totalitarianism begin to take root in California, where they sneak laws in. They call it one thing, and then they decriminalize everything. They give this proposition a sweet sounding name, and in essence, what it does is it decriminalizes major felony crimes, making things legal. And then once again, the people suffer, and they wonder, well, wait a minute, why is my car getting broken into and there's nothing being done? Because you've basically just made it decriminalized.
Right, but see, what they then turn around to is they then politicize speech so that you and I, what we're saying right now is blasphemous, and they're eventually going to criminalize it. The theory that McKinnon at the University of Michigan professed years ago that thoughts are violence and words are thoughts that are violence, so now we got to control words. By the way, that's right out of the Republic, Plato's Republic, by the way. Control what we say, control what we think. And so you and I can't even debate certain ideas. You can't even things that we talked about in sociology class in the 1970s, trying to deal with the culture of poverty, the ghetto problems that people have of crime and poverty and hunger. You can't even be discussed except by the Democrats or the liberals or the intellectual elite, the universities. They will dictate to us what the solutions or the debate points are. And anybody who tries to contradict or offer up other solution, they have a whole package full of brandings that are fatal. Once you're branded a racist or a misogynist or a homophobe, your life is ruined. And that's the problem is that stifles all intellectual thought and growth in our society. But what it does do, it gives them power. And the power, you know, once we have an unequal balance of power in communication and conversation, you know that's might as well. It is leaning toward a dictatorial system, and I'm frustrated because again, all I've seen against law enforcement the last 8 years has driven me to study more and more. My degree was political science, and so I already had a foundation in this. But boy, I've started looking in this more and more as I see what the assault on law enforcement. Because you, law enforcement, you know, Randy, that's the glue of a free society. And people who aren't safe and have no trust, they're not free. You have to have safety. You have to trust each other. You have to trust your government. You have to trust that law enforcement officer is going to be fair and impartial and not trying to weigh what the socioeconomic conditions or background of a suspect is. We used to criminalize acts. Now we criminalize thought. We criminalize intent. We criminalize things that were never part of it. I mean, this is part of the problem is that we try to diagnose.
So one of the things that I've seen, Dave, and watched with great concern is it almost seems like the left has been very effective in eroding the confidence that the public has in law enforcement. And by doing so, they have put questions in the minds of people, so it has now affected the way others are willing to go to lengths in order to be non-compliant, and they seem to have been effective in creating this environment.
Yep, yeah, you hit it right on the head. In fact, there's always a subtext when I listen to a lot of anytime I listen to some of these commentators that if you're especially if you're a young black man or anybody of color, any person of color has a right to resist. And there's a certain absurdity here because you, on one hand, you're constantly having people put on the air on the medias that they're teaching their youngsters that to be afraid of police and be terrified and driving while black and on this long monologue, although there's no statistics to prove it. I'm just blasphemous saying this. It's almost criminal for me to say what I just said, because you must never, never debate dogma, because they always throw that, they pick up a racist card and throw it down and say, you're done, Smith. You're racist. How dare you say that?
That's exactly what has happened. So the police have been painted with the racist card, and then now it's like, when did you stop beating your wife? You can't respond to that in any coherent fashion because it sounds like you're making excuses.
Well, and understand, let's be honest, ever since policing in the 21st century, that ridiculous 130 plus page screed where 16 or so or a group of experts in 60 days solved every police problem. And the subtext was this: you must change the police culture. Well, number one, which culture? The New York culture, the LA culture, the Phoenix culture, the Vegas culture? America is a great experiment in law enforcement. That's why people come from all over the world to learn how we do it, because we have this great, there isn't just one police culture, but the assault was actually on what they perceive as a toxic masculinity. It's part of that intellectual cadre. But the absurdity of it was that we are oppressing people, that we need to stop doing this, we need to be trained in this, and there was no empirical evidence whatsoever. It was just a whole bunch of people with complaints came before that commission, and that was the whole problem. Sure, yeah, they said wear your seatbelts and wear your body armor. But if you ever sit down and actually read it, which very few people have, That's the whole problem. The entire criminal justice system said, let's change, because this document, and it's far too long and stupid to read, but by God, they say we need to change our culture. And the chiefs jumped right on it. The especially the larger the urban area, the more likely the chief is to agree and acknowledge, yes, there's something wrong. There's nothing wrong. The American public didn't believe there was anything wrong with law enforcement. The law enforcement didn't believe there was the media, the elites, the Democratic Party as a whole tends to say that, because I heard that in debate after debate with Bernie and Hillary doing the mantra of oppression. And I heard no law enforcement intellectual leaders being brought forward on the media, no real power base to say that's a lie. You know, we do the best we can. We go out and we impartially. You want to have partial law enforcement? Just wait. Procedural justice becomes fully entrenched in our criminal justice system. There won't be any impartiality. There won't be any blindfold over a little misjustice. She's going to peek out from under that blindfold and tip the scales. However, the fairness doctrine goes. This is also scary to me. The more I study this, because no community's clamoring around. You go to the urban centers and to the ghettos and the barrios, and these people desperately want law enforcement to protect them.
And isn't that the irony? The people. In fact, the last shooting, this very divisive shooting that took place of the armed suspect in Chicago, the police were there on foot patrol in response to the neighborhood asking them to be there, and then when they respond and they find an armed suspect and get place their lives in jeopardy and take out the suspect, then that causes protests and riots. It's just the absurdity is getting more and more dangerous, and we've kind of run out of time, Dave. And you know, you and I could talk about this ad nauseum, and probably still never solve it. But I thank you so much for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio. You and I will once again pick up the pieces here and talk about this at another later date. But you continue to train officers to survive and be a voice out there for the American law enforcement officer. And we will keep on fighting the good fight.
Thank you, Randy.
Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books: The True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book, because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't. But this book is full of inspiration. It changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. But Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. Shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, You change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But the Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at. It's from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook, and it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason that the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in Middle East for discovering IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, it's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out. Danger!
End of watch.
This segment of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is called End of Watch. I refer to the deaths, the line of duty deaths, of America's law enforcement officers. I read their names each week, and each week it seems like it is a never-ending chore. This week I have three names to read. The first is Trooper Tyler James Edenhofer of the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Trooper Tyler Edenhofer was shot and killed after he and several officers responded to reports of a subject throwing objects at vehicles on I-10 near the Avondale Boulevard in Goodyear at approximately 10 p.m. Three Arizona Department of Public Safety troopers and two Goodyear Police Department officers responded to the scene and attempted to take the suspect into custody. The man resisted arrest and engaged the officers in a struggle that lasted several minutes. The subject was able to obtain one of the officer's duty weapons during the struggle and opened fire, killing Trooper Edenhofer and wounding another Arizona Department of Public Safety trooper. The subject was taken into custody. Trooper Edenhofer had graduated from the police academy only 3 months earlier and was still in field training at the time of his murder. He was a U.S. Navy veteran. Trooper Tyler James Edenhofer, Arizona Department of Public Safety in Arizona. End of watch, July 25th, 2018. July 25th, Police Officer Michael J. Mikalski, Milwaukee Police Department, Wisconsin. Police Officer Michael Mikalski was shot and killed while attempting to apprehend a wanted subject in the area of 28th Street and Wright Street. The subject was wanted for weapons violations, narcotics violations, and violation of parole. Officer Mikalski and other members of the Special Investigations Division located the man in the area and attempted to take him into custody. The man fled on foot, and the officers pursued him into a nearby home. The man ran up a set of stairs and encountered a locked door, at which time he hid in a large pile of clothing on a landing for approximately 10 minutes. As officers searched the house, Officer Mikalski walked up the stairs to check the second floor. The man suddenly emerged from the pile of clothes and shot Officer Mikalski without warning with a .45 caliber handgun. He then shot and wounded two other officers before running out of ammunition and surrendering. He was charged with Officer Mikalski's murder, two counts of attempted murder, and other charges. Officer Mikalski had served with the Milwaukee Police Department for 17 years. He survived by his wife and three sons. Officer Michael J. Mikalski, Milwaukee Police Department, Wisconsin. End of watch, July 25th. 2018. The third officer to die in the line of duty this week, Police Officer Adam Edward Jobbers Miller of the Fort Myers Police Department in Florida. Police Officer Adam Jobbers Miller succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained on July 21st, 2018, after responding to an assault and larceny call at a gas station on Martin Luther King at approximately 7:30 p.m. As officers arrived, the suspect fled on foot along Flint Drive with Officer Jarvis Miller in pursuit. The man opened fire with a handgun, striking Officer Jarvis Miller. Another officer transported him to Lee Memorial Hospital, where he remained until succumbing to his wound on July 28, 2018. The subject was taken into custody after being shot and wounded. Officer Jarvis Miller had served with the Fort Myers Police Department for 3 years and previously served as a firefighter with the Wayne Fire Department in New Jersey. Police Officer Adam Edward Jarvis Miller, Fort Myers Police Department, Florida. End of watch, Saturday, July 28th, 2018. May they rest in peace. I want to personally thank each and every one of you for tuning in to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. The fact that you are interested enough in law enforcement, what is going on concerning them, that tells me that you are good citizens. You're people that care about this country and about our nation's law enforcement officers. For those of you who are serving actively or who did serve, thank you for your service. Let's do everything to keep you safe out there and make sure that you go home to your families, because blue lives do matter.